listening to SFP Now.
To an exciting episode of SFP Now here on December 1st. Wow, December 1st. Can't believe it's December already. Only 2 days to Christmas.
Maybe when they listen to this recording.
It might be Christmas by the time we get this out. Anyway, welcome to another exciting show. We're back again with more TV reviews and TV talk. Joining me as always are my co-conspirators, Matt Pyle and Jeff Burns. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Great.
Well, you know, so like it's great having you on again. I've actually been quite busy over the last couple of weeks. I've been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate, but I've also been messing around with my newest acquisition, which is a Steam Deck.
Yes. I'm excited to hear what you think of it, because I had the original one, but you got the OLED, right?
I got the OLED, and it's really good. I've been playing Spider-Man Miles Morales on it, so it works on that really, really well. But trouble is, it burns the battery like nothing else, you know. So like about 20 minutes play on Miles Morales, you know, you've only got about 85% of your battery left after that. Sort of thing.
But that battery is better than mine. That's they've improved it for the OLED, right?
They have, yeah. But I think you still have to make compromises in your settings to try and get as long as possible out of it as possible. I mean, I've been playing Spider-Man, House Flipper. I've also played a bit of Baldur's Gate on there. But I prefer Baldur's Gate on a bigger screen, I've got to say. So I've been messing around with that. And
is there a game called House Flipper? Do you like flip houses? Like,
yeah, you basically you start off as a handyman, working on people's houses and doing repairs and fitting radiators and painting them and cleaning up. Oh, yeah. Sort of thing. So eventually you get enough money to raise to buy your own house, and then you do that one up and you sang it on, and you know, you get reviewed on how much of a good job you do. Sort of thing. It's quite fun. There's another one called Tenants, which is quite funny as well, where you're a landlord.
Oh, I thought it was about David Tennant. You play David Tennant.
You're playing landlord, you know, the Tenants, sorry, it's called. But I've been playing that and Baldur's Gate and Spider-Man on the deck, and I've been quite enjoying it. And it's quite handy as well for chat as well, because I've been talking to my mate Adam while I've been on there. You know, from sat in front of the room watching TV and just playing some games. It's just fun. And the other thing I've done, I've just watched Genie, which is a new movie. It was released today here in England on Sky Movies channel. It was released a couple of days ago on Peacock, I believe, and it stars Melissa McCarthy as a genie. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a movie by Richard Curtis, who did Love Actually and all those sort of like UK sort of like rom-coms. Oh. And it's based on a story that he did called, it's based on a movie that he did back in the 90s, back in 1991, early on his career, called Bernard and the Genie. And in the original, it's Lenny Henry that plays the genie, and it's Alan Cumming who plays Bernard. In this version, it's a slightly different story, more is at stake. And it's about a guy called Bernard. His family kind of walks out on him after he returns home late from work one day and lets his daughter down. Quite badly, I might add. And the next day he gets fired from his job, and when he's home, he rubs on this jewelry box, and a genie appears, and it's Melissa McCarthy. And lots of comedic fun ensues as he uses his wishes to try and get his family back.
Cool.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Love Actually, so I'm definitely a fan of the creator there.
Well, it's actually one of the first things he did here in the UK, I think. And it came out in 1991, the original. And it starred Lenny Henry and Alan Cumming, and it also had the guy Mr. Bean.
Rowan Atkinson.
It had Rowan Atkinson in it, the original. And it was basically a big Christmas TV movie that was released in 1991. I don't think it sold anywhere else. If it did, it certainly wasn't really talked about that much. But I remember seeing it in 1991 because I'd just finished 3 years studying in Lancaster, and I'd come home, and that was on as kind of like a Christmas movie, so it kind of sticks in the memory. And it stars a very, very young and fresh-faced Alan Cumming before he did X-Men and before he did everything else. So it's quite fun to watch. But the new version, Genie, it's a different story. It's kind of the same story, but different because there's more at stake because he's got a family in the new one, whereas in the old one, he didn't have a family. It was just him and his girlfriend dumped him and that. So it wasn't as much as at stake. But I'd recommend it's a fun film. And it's kind of like a fun way to spend 90 minutes.
Cool.
All right.
But I think it's on Peacock over there in the States, and it's just called Genie.
Cool.
Now it's over to what have you been up to, Jeff?
Still doing my Super Geeked Up, Geeky Chat and Improv Comedy Show every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And Mark was on, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I think, right? So we have fun doing that every week, and you can watch it on YouTube at youtube.com/supergeekedup. Still doing my geeky comedic erotica writing under my pen name, Riley Rose, rileyroseerotica.com. I've just been releasing new episodes of my fun take on Little Red Riding Hood called Little Red Riding Slut. It's a Kindle Vella series. And game-wise, since you mentioned games, fortunately, I need to get back to my solo campaign, but I've been playing Baldur's Gate with these guys. And I actually went back to a game called Greedfall, which is an RPG that came out 2019. It's by a company called Spiders. It's the closest I have seen to, like, I would say a classic BioWare game, like Mass Effect, Dragon Age. But I heard Greedfall 2 is coming out, so I wanted to go back and finish.
Yeah. I was just going to mention that to you, Jeff, that Greedfall 2 is coming out. And also, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, I mentioned that that Gangs of Sherwood game that's coming out.
Oh, yeah, that just came out.
Bobby and Robin, it's just come out. I'm probably going to order myself a copy of it next week.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't love the trailer, but I don't know. I might look at it again. I might give it a try. We'll see.
Well, I know Switch missed it, so.
I do love Robin Hood stuff. Yeah, so thanks for mentioning that. Oh, good. Awesome. Yeah, so doing that. And what else was I? I thought I was playing something else. I don't know. Can't remember all these games. Too many games. I'll let Marks talk about the show we do on Thursday nights. We actually just tried out a new game last night, but I'll kick it over to Marks.
Hey, yeah. The game, what you're talking about, is Art of the Role on Thursdays. Yeah, so we tried out Outgunned, which is a new game, a successful Kickstarter. It's a cinematic action game, right?
This is what we're calling tabletop RPGs now at this point. We're talking, folks, not video games.
Oh, yeah, sorry. TTRPGs, not CRPGs or whatever.
Or JRPGs.
What do you say to them? Did you say titty RPGs?
TT.
Oh, that's a great idea. I need to make one to go along with my erotica. Good idea.
That's a different kind of game. And supposedly, I don't know if this is true, but some YouTubers said that in Japan, they call TTRPGs, like, they call them table talk role-playing games. I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah. Oh,
I can see that.
So Outgunned is kind of rules light-ish, but 80s or I guess 80s, 90s, whatever kind of time period ish action adventure type game. So almost like those kind of action movies. And it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I played a martial art guy and Jeff played a driver
He took out 8-9 people in one scene all by himself.
My character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be the pizza delivery guy because the pizza delivery guy gets all the action.
No, it's not that kind of game.
It's the wrong kind of game.
He's still thinking of the titty one.
Yeah, he's zoned out. He's not listening to what we're saying. um, But that was a fun game. It was it had a big Kickstarter thing. So Steve GM'd that. Steve is someone, if you followed the Super Geeked Up YouTube channel a few years back, we did a bunch of D&D stuff with him as the DM. So very knowledgeable game master.
Yeah, but so. We do different our tabletop RPGs every week on Art of the Roll channel on Twitch and YouTube, Thursdays, 10:30 Eastern. If you want to check out different games.
Heck yeah. I think next, barring something happening, next would be like a 5e,
a holiday-themed adventure.
Yeah, holiday-themed D&D adventure. Mm-hmm. I think we'll have a new player join us for that particular session too. So, and on Tuesdays, I should mention, I also do actual plays with a group called Dream Slayer Studios. They got a YouTube channel and a podcast that's not recorded live like Art of the Roll, but it comes out every week. And we play like Everyday Heroes, which is like a 5e modern day like spinoff type thing. Although we're switching to Marvel Superheroes pretty soon, at least for some of the games. So I have an interesting character in the works for that. We'll see how that works out. And then I been gaming D&D, you know, privately with a group of friends. And then we've been playing Baldur's Gate 3, like you mentioned. And what else have I been up to? Doing some writing and working on projects, getting the third anthology ready. Getting lots of pitches for that. I want to open it up a little bit more to some other authors, and got lots of interesting pitches coming in with fairy tales, fables, and folklore. Hmm?
It's fairy tales this time, isn't it? Fairy tales and fables.
And folklore, yep.
I could probably think of a few pitches, but, you know.
Yeah, well, you're welcome to pitch or submit a story if you want. So, we're going to have a Kickstarter with that next year. What's cool that we'll have stretch goals for a bunch of other stories too. So that's why I open it up a little bit more, because we have a little bit more slots open.
If you want more information on that, folks, CabotCrossing.com, where you can get the other anthologies we've been doing.
Yes, like Dragons of a Different Tale and Tales of Monstrosity or Lost Tales. So, but yeah, I think that's mostly what I've been up to. I'm working on some other stuff and doing lots of tabletop RPGs type stuff, which is kind of cool because I haven't got to play a whole lot for a while, and this last year I've been playing like a lot. So
yeah. Uh-huh. I can't believe how much you guys have embraced Baldur's Gate, you know, given that it's not a traditional tabletop, it's more of a video game.
But it is very influenced by D&D.
It's the most faithful to tabletop D&D I've seen, at least that I've played. I mean, I think there are other ones out there, but also, Ian, you may not know this. I actually came to tabletops kind of late, only probably about 5 years ago. I was a video gamer since I was like a little kid. So yeah, game RPGs have always been more to me than actually tabletop.
Yeah, I've always been a video game myself, Jeff. I did try tabletop a little bit in the 90s. But trouble was, a group that I got with, it kind of split off very quickly. And the trouble is, you know, in order to get into a good tabletop community, you've got to find someone who's willing to DM it on a regular basis.
That's always the trick, yep.
And you've got to have, you know, you've got to have people that are committed to it, that are going to commit for at least a few weeks or, you know, however long it takes. And
it's tough.
It's tough. It's really
hard. I've been in RPG since junior high. So start off with Star Wars.
Old school.
Yeah, old school. Star Wars, Marvel Superheroes, original Marvel Superheroes game, and then got into D&D. I didn't do D&D first, but it didn't take too long. A couple years in, I got into D&D.
Or as Ian would call it, the double D game, probably.
Probably so.
It's part of Titty and Tabletop.
I'm actually more into G&G.
What?
more into G&G.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if I want to know.
No, double G game.
Oh, double G. Well, double D's aren't big enough for you. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that at all. You're, that's your imagination running.
All right. Yes, of course. Hey, let's talk movies and shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, get on to the subject at hand here. Okay, we're going to start off this. I don't know if you've seen this new show, Jeff. It's on Apple. Matt and I have been watching it. Episode 4 aired today, I think. And it's Monarch.
It did, however, I will ask. That's the only episode I haven't seen, so no spoilers, please.
Yeah. Monarch Legacy of Monsters. And basically, it's set a year after the 2014 Godzilla movie. And it's about three people that come together. And they're all related to one of the scientists that works for the company Monarch, which is like the corporation that was holding the monsters in the subsequent Godzilla movies, you know, the follow-up sort of thing. And they kind of come together, you know, one's called Kate and the other one's called
Kentaro.
And they're kind of like half brother and sister, and they're looking for their father, who was presumed dead after the San Francisco Godzilla attack. But they're looking for him and trying to, you know, and they found out all his secrets, and that he's working, that he was working for this company called Monarch. Which was tracking all the Titans, all the Godzilla sort of like creatures on the Earth. But you don't know whether their reasons for tracking these Titans are for good or ill, really. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, just to add, if anybody doesn't know, this is, like he's mentioned, this is set in the same movie universe as not only Godzilla but the Kong recent movies like Skull Island and Godzilla versus Kong movies. So it's all that same universe, which I had actually kind of it's called the Monsterverse. Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah.
I had to go back and read because I was trying to figure out, like, are any of these characters from the movies? But then it seems like they're not actually, except I think maybe one character was mentioned.
Is there father in the movies? I can't remember.
Yeah, wait, one. I think maybe one person was referenced or something. I don't know. Oh wait, oh the John Goodman character. The John Goodman character. Okay. We see the younger version of him. Yes. Because this show also jumps back and forth between 2015 and like the 50s and 60s.
52 and 55.
Yeah. So yeah, like actually, I'll be honest, I've never had Apple. I got the free trial just to watch this, and now it actually just let it renew because I want to keep watching the show every week. Because I'm really loving the show. Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job. The characters are interesting. They have I don't know. It's good, very good drama, but it's understandable. Like the tension between them and what they're trying to do. Kurt Russell is great in this. I mean, I think actually all the actors are really awesome.
And his son
plays the younger version of his character as well.
I know, yes, his real life son plays the younger version. That's really cool.
Freaked me out that actually the week because I did a shot of him and where it was his son back in 1955 and his son screaming something. Then they pan out to
They dissolved like from his face to the Russell's face. And that's and where I really saw the likeness when they did that shot.
Their mouths are really, really similar.
Yeah, it's Wyatt Russell is the son. Yeah. He's also doing a really good job.
Just really
but I like that this, you know, some people I know, which I get it, they just love seeing the monsters, but I like it that this is really focused on the characters. And we don't really see a lot of the monsters, although as the episodes have gone on so far, we are seeing more and more of them. Mm-hmm. Which I think is good to slowly build that. So I'm really enjoying the character drama and how they're building the mythos. Because I'll be honest with you, outside of Skull Island, I love Skull Island. The other movies I couldn't really get into that much.
Godzilla versus Kong.
That was okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
Right. Skull Island, I liked, I enjoyed Skull Island. The first Godzilla was okay. The second Godzilla, where they bring Mithra into it, was really good. I think
what I like about this though is the TV show obviously can do a much deeper dive into character development and the whole mythos behind everything, right?
So there's a lot, we've never got a lot of information on Monarch. They're always just kind of there, and so it's kind of cool to go into that. But I think all the MonsterVerse things, they've always been very character focused. That's where it works. Like those movies are shot as a show. It's like when these monsters come, you don't see it from their perspective, the monster perspective. You see it always from the people like looking up. Mm-hmm. So you if you're an IMAX or something in the movies, it's like you feel like you're stuck in a city with the monster coming over you. And I think that's a good choice. And in TV, you can explore the characters so much more in depth. So
I mean, I'm actually really enjoying the characters as well, Jeff. I mean, I like the tension between Kate and Kentaro, you know, when they find out that they're brother and sister, you know, it's totally unexpected to them.
I will say there were some things they did with Kate that to me made her a little unlikable. But the thing is, I could fully understand why she was reacting the way she was based on what she found out. It was very real.
rejecting the call, right? You know, in storytelling. So she keeps like, but then, going, but, no, I don't want to do this.
But even now, like after episode three, you see her starting a little bit, right? Get a little bit more where we want to see her go. Yeah, Guitaro is cool. And I think they're probably going to, develop more of a sister brother relationship as the series goes on, hopefully.
I think the character of Maze Rinnikun as well. And, you know, she gets quite a big role in the fourth episode, as does Kentaro. This fourth episode that you're not seeing, it's really great character development for all of them.
Nice. Cool. Folks, May is like the techno wizard friend of Kentaro, for those who haven't seen it.
Yeah. I'm liking the show. I like a lot of Apple shows. I think they're all good. They're all well produced. But they can be a little slow sometimes, you know. That's my only gripe about a lot of them. But this show isn't slow. This show has the right pace going.
And, it's kind of hitting it pretty good, isn't it, Rig? It's so it's not too slow. It's not too fast paced. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like unhappy medium, I think.
Yeah. So since I have Apple now, I know you've talked about this before, Mark, and maybe you too, Ian. But I've noticed like how heavy Apple has invested into sci-fi, which I appreciated. So I've been checking out other shows on Apple now, and we're going to talk about Silo later in the episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's that's one thing I appreciate about Apple, even though I don't think they have enough. They definitely don't have enough that I would be a regular subscriber. But I do like that they focused on sci-fi for sure.
Yeah, there's a show that we've not included in here, which is another Apple show that I wanted to touch on very quickly. But before we do...
I just want to give a shout out to that. Actually, my favorite character is probably, when we go back to the 50s, Emiko, which is the grandmother, I think, of Kate and Kentaro. Mm-hmm. But she's like the Japanese scientist who's like kind of one of the main things behind the discovery of these titans, as they call them, these monsters. Her character's great. I love her character.
Yeah. Well, we might as well, we're on Apple, talk about the rest of the Apple stuff we want to talk about, right?
Okay. So you want to rate it first, though?
Sorry.
You rate it? How many rahs are you going to get?
We'll see how many titans, but okay, we can do that. Wait, what are we out of 10? Is that what we do? I don't even remember. We're 5? Yeah. I don't. What do we do?
You got a rrr 10 times.
Oh no. What's half a rrr? I don't know. That's like a quarter.
I ain't got a freaking clue.
Oh, wait, it's out of 10, right? Is that what we're doing?
Out of 10.
Yeah.
I'll give it, 9.25. Because I'm really enjoying it. Again, you know, before I've seen the whole show, I'm not gonna. I like to give a little leeway, right? Before I go too crazy with the ratings.
Yeah.
But that's a very high rating, though. So I'm really enjoying it. It's probably the show I'm looking forward to the most right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the same for me. 9.25 is a pretty good number for.
Wait, you got to do it. You got to do the.
I'm going to give it a solid 9. Rahs.
Yeah, we should just do sound effects for every rating for.
I wouldn't allow room for it, to be honest, because, you know, I think potentially by the end of the series, it could end up being 10.
Good. They landed ending right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the other Apple show that I wanted to briefly mention, it's called For All Mankind, and it's basically a science fiction show, and it's basically posits the question, you know, what would be different if Russia was ahead of NASA in the space race? And it's set up this alternate history now where Russia and America are allies, and they're actually partners in colonizing Mars, and they've created a colony on Mars called Happy Valley, sort of thing. And the North Koreans are involved in this as well, but the North Koreans are not politically allied to either Russia or America in it. And you know, it's another show which is great for character development, and it's got really, really good characters in it. Like, one of the main characters is an astronaut called Ed Baldwin, who's like an astronaut from the 1950s, and we're actually in the early 2000s now in this show, and he's still up there on Happy Valley running the place as an old man. And he's played by Joel Kinnaman, who played RoboCop a few years ago, I think, and has been in a few other things. But it's a really good show. It's kind of like an alternate timeline for NASA. It's very alternate history. It deals with you know, what would happen if one NASA people sort of like ends up working in Russia, sort of thing. There's a whole storyline where, you know, the head of NASA is actually giving NASA secrets to the Russians, and that was in the last series, and she's paying the consequences for that now because she's now living in Russia. Sort of thing. But it's a really good show. It goes into the social and economic politics side of it. And you know, the special effects are good. You know, the bits that set out in space are very realistic, and you can imagine it actually happening, you know. But it's what's very telling is the kind of space program in this show is a little bit further along than we are now, sort of thing.
Oh yeah, well they're on colonies on Mars, don't they?
Yeah, they've got a colony on Mars called Happy Valley. And the whole third season, which aired last year, was about them building towards that colonization of Mars. And in that one, you had a NASA in the race between the Russians and a private company to be the first to get to Mars and colonize it. And that was the whole story of the third season. Whereas this fourth season is, you know, it's set a few years later on where they've actually settled on Mars and they built a colony. And it's about where the Russians are at, where the Americans are at, where this private company is at. And now you've got the North Koreans involved as well in the story. So it's really, really, really interesting. It's a fun watch. So I highly recommend you give it a go. You know, there's four seasons of it, and I think each season is roughly 10 episodes a season, sort of thing. So
yeah, I actually like that. All the ones I've looked at so far in Apple, the sci-fi, they're all 10 episodes, which is still not a ton, but I like that. That feels like okay to me. Like whenever I see like 6 or 8, I'm just like, ugh, it's so short. I don't know. For some reason, 10 feels much better to me, like if it's 10 or 12. So well, I like that, know, they always do 10.
I mean, I highly recommend For All Mankind because it's quite an interesting show. It's a fun show. It's got some great characters in it. Mm-hmm. You know, some really interesting storylines and alternate history to what actually has happened, you know, with NASA and that. So, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, for this series, I'd give it a 9.5 out of 10.
9.5 what?
9.5 astronauts.
Okay. You want to do a quick Silo?
Sure. Talk?
This is around Apple.
Sure, sure.
So I just, I just started watching this since I got Apple because of Monarch. So I've only watched the first two episodes, so I can't go too much into it. But I know Mark's has watched the whole thing, right?
Yep.
This is really another really good sci-fi show. Rebecca Ferguson is the lead, and I've loved her ever since Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which I first saw her in. So it's about, if you're not familiar, folks, basically there's this crazy huge silo built underground. From what they've said, it seems like it's almost at least 200 floors or something, levels underground. Mm-hmm. And nobody's allowed to go to the surface because supposedly there's this like poisonous atmosphere and you'll die if you go to the surface. So, and I think it's, 140 years or something. They said maybe there's been a long time since anyone's ever been out to the surface since this rebellion happened or something. Basically, people don't really know like the history of what happened before in the show. Like it's kind of all, and it's kind of about people, certain people, characters trying to get out to the surface and what happens to them. And is, have they been lied to? Is it actually safe out there? Again, I'm trying not to spoil anything. So I'm kind of talking in generalities. But I don't know. I think this is like, so far it's like really good sci-fi. I feel like the characters are very interesting. They got that, you know, the cool thing about like, you don't know exactly what's going on, what's true, what's being hidden. So you're kind of trying to guess the truth. So I'm really enjoying it. I mean, there's a couple of things I feel that happened character wise that don't really make sense. Like why people would want her to be the sheriff, or at least why the mayor would, whatever, it's fine. I'll go along with it. I'm really digging it. I'm looking forward to watching more. I don't know if you want to add anything, Marks, without spoilers, please.
It's great.
I don't know if you've seen it, Ian.
I seen the first episode because I actually initially reviewed it last year with Matt when we talked about it. So I know enough about the setup. I did intend on going back to it, but I just haven't got around to it yet. Yeah. It's
kind of a slow burn at first, but it builds and builds as it goes in the season until I got to the end. I was like, no, give me season two now.
Well, I guess I'm on the IMDb page, and Rebecca Ferguson is listed for 19 episodes at least. So it looks like there is going to be a season two.
There's supposed to be a season two, yeah.
So look, that's good. I'm glad it got renewed.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. Nice thing of Apple is, at least so far, they seem committed to their shows and stuff.
Oh, that's good. Not like, unlike Netflix.
No, Netflix doesn't care. They just, they grab stuff. If anything, they're just like, ah, after three seasons, you know, why bother?
Right. Well, that's, well, I'm glad to hear that. That's good. And I guess I can see what you're saying. It's kind of a slow burn, but I guess I didn't really feel that way. Maybe just because it was working so well to me, right? I was invested in the characters and,
yeah,
and the mystery of like what's happening. Or like what's, yeah, really on the surface, what's really, yeah, the history.
It keeps pulling with the mystery and stuff. But yeah, it's good. It's actually, it's based on one of the first successful like indie authors' works. So
I saw it was based on a book. I didn't know he was an indie author though.
Yeah. He's one of the first success stories of an indie author. So
is it a series of books or just one, or do you know?
It's a series of books, yeah. 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 So yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes. It's a good show. It's one of the best ones. If you want, since we're talking about Apple, if you want something a little more lighter, comedic, Schmigadoon is really funny. It's like a magical
Schmigadoon.
Schmigadoon, yep.
What is that?
It's about this couple who are having relationship issues, so they go to a retreat, this camp retreat, and they're off hiking, and they find themselves in this mysterious town called Schmigadoon, where everybody music burst out into musical songs and stuff.
Oh, and I do know the one you're talking about.
It's, yeah, it's, yeah, actually, it's actually quite funny, this, because Schmigadoon, it's actually, I think they're riffing on an old Gene Kelly movie.
Mm-hmm. They are, yeah.
Gene Kelly movie called Brigadoon, and in the movie Brigadoon, a similar thing happens to him and his mate. They end up in this quaint Irish village, right? You know, which is about 200 years in the past or something, and everyone's just breaking out in song.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But yeah, and they kind of talk about, there's different elements of musicals in that time period, that kind of era in musical that's in it. And then later they have Schmicago, you know, and so that's a different time, you know,
okay, right,
feel. So it's funny. It's got... what's his name? A Key and Peele?
Is it Michael Key, right?
Yeah, yeah. So he's in it. It's pretty funny. And then, of course, was it, oh my gosh, the one where they keep forgetting, where they, when they go to work, they forget. It starts with S, not Succession. It's...
Oh, I know. I added to my list. I know what you mean with Brandon Routh, right? Routh in it?
I think so. Yeah, it's really good. Kind of slow a little bit, kind of weird, but it's really clever. Concept. I can't wait for that to get season two. So one I did not like was Invasion, because they kind of,
well,
you hate Invasion. Yeah, I didn't. It's not, maybe it gets better, I don't know, but
yeah, I struggle. I couldn't get through the first 10 minutes of it. I seriously stood off for the first 10 minutes. I couldn't get into it.
Well, there's there's a marketing trick they did in episode one that really ticked me off a little bit, and I shouldn't say it because it'll be spoiler, but it just left a bad taste in my mouth. And the next couple episodes weren't very good. And I'm just like, nah, I'm checking out. So,
by the way, I just looked it up. I think the one you're talking about is Severance.
Yes, that's Severance. Okay. Yeah, that's a really good show. Yeah. It's a good show.
How is Foundation? I have that on my list too.
Foundation, I think it's really, really good. Well, again, it's kind of slow.
Kind of slow. It's got Dune vibes a little bit. I mean, it's based on Isaac Asimov's, you know, yeah, Foundation work.
It's based off Isaac Asimov's Foundation books, but obviously it's not Isaac Asimov's Foundation books, because it's being criticized for deviating too much by a lot of your hardcore Isaac Asimov fans.
Yeah. Well, you almost got to. It's very hard to translate that on TV. Yeah,
and I just think, you know, give it a break, guys. You know, it's an adaptation. It's not going to be word for word, scene for scene, Isaac Asimov. It's good. It's got to be different. You know, mm-hmm. if that was the case, if they were to make the Lord of the Rings trilogy into movies, each movie would be about 24 hours long.
Yeah,
given the size of those books.
Those movies are long enough.
Yeah. We don't need any more.
You know what I mean?
It's
an awful lot in the books that isn't in any of the films, you know, such as Tom Bombadil. You know, he's not.
It's a shame that character's not it, though. But anyway, Apple's got lots of cool stuff. Check it out if you haven't yet. It's worth getting for a few months and binge a bunch of stuff, and then you can check it out again next year if you need to.
Okay, well, right. So now we're moving on to, and this is the movie, right? The Marvels.
Yeah, have any of you seen it? I guess Ian hasn't. This is the movie, right?
Yeah, I've seen
the first one, but I've not gone out of my way to see this one yet.
Yeah.
And I believe it's actually tanked at the box office as well. It's not doing too well.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I, you know what? Captain Marvel is one of the few Marvel movies I have not seen. I've seen a little bit of Ms. Marvel. I just, I won't get into it. I wasn't really interested in this, but Marks, how marvelous or non-marvelous was it?
It was pretty good. It was not one of their best, but it's far from one of the worst. So it's kind of like, it shouldn't have done as bad in the box office as it did. I don't think it, similar to Flash in a way.
Did it wrong?
What's that?
You think they might have marketed it wrong?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of stuff working against them, right? They couldn't have, none of the actors could promote it because of the strike. So they feel that that partially hurt it. And then there was a lot of backlash online from people who just even hadn't seen it yet, who either don't like Brie Larson or they don't like, or they thought it was too woke. And, you know, that kind of stuff that pops up.
Yeah. So
and, about the thing, I mean, the red carpet thing is, or the promotion is true because of the strike, which, but that applies to every movie, right? So I don't totally really buy when people use that as an excuse, because then why are their movies doing well and they're not, you know?
A lot of them aren't doing that well. A lot of
they're
movies,
not, but I don't, yeah. I don't actually, here's the thing. I don't think it's because the actors can't go talk about it. I think movies have been doing poorly for a long time, and COVID was the biggest detriment.
Yeah,
of that.
Yeah. Not the habit of going.
Not lack of promotion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another factor too, right? It's people aren't going to theater as much. You can buy a big screen TV at home. People got out of the habit because of COVID. And it is expensive. You know, it's not a cheap thing to do. So, people are thinking, well, it'll be on Disney Plus in a month or so. I can wait, you know?
No, that's true, right? Because, anything on Marvel, they know it's going to be on Disney Plus.
Yeah, they know it'll eventually come on there, so.
And usually not that long, you're like you said.
Yeah, yeah, so.
2-3 months, I think.
Particularly if it does poorly and it's out of theaters quicker, then it'll be on Disney Plus quicker.
Right? So, you know, so we got a lot of stuff. Now, maybe it'll come up Doctor Who, maybe it won't. But even the president, the CEO dude of Disney Iger. has talked about how maybe they need to switch up focus. That maybe the wokeness thing has got at least a little bit of truth to it, or at least a little bit of effect.
I think it definitely does.
Yeah,
it can. I'm glad you brought that CW. Up. I'm going to talk about that later, but you can talk about
it. Yeah, I figure it might come up in Doctor Who or something. So I know that's why some people are maybe getting on, assuming that would be with the Marvels, but really the Marvels has nothing in it at all except there's three women and one's a Pakistani American, but they don't make a big deal about it and they don't focus on it at all. So there's like no, unless you just are like, hey, there's women in it. It's woke. There's really nothing in that scream like Supergirl CW, you know, vibes when what's at its worst, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, that, you know, our Doctor Who, Chris Chibnall seasons vibe.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is Doctor Who at its worst.
Yeah, there's nothing like that in here. It's kind of, it's actiony, it's kind of lighthearted a little bit. Miss Marvel's great in it. A lot of people like her and that
I like
movie.
Her.
Yeah, I like the actress in general. She's her enthusiasm about everything's shows.
I don't dislike her.
Okay. have you seen Miss Marvel?
What a great recommendation.
I don't dislike her.
Maybe we should rewind. Have you watched Miss Marvel? Because if you haven't watched Miss Marvel or the Marvels, you probably don't know anything about her except for news or something.
Do you know what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is?
I'm sort of on the fence, is what I'm saying. Because she's bigger than me, and you know, I don't want to get beat up.
Miss Marvel? I don't know.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah, she might be.
Well, Miss Marvel could beat you up for their powers, yes.
Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm. I liked her character, and I quite enjoyed the series that she came from.
Okay, there you go.
Even though I wasn't as blown away by that series as I was by some of the other Marvel shows, but I still enjoyed it and enjoyed the characters.
You like her in it because it's a lot more of that, and her parents are in it, like not all of her family, but some of them appear in it. There's nothing, you know, I know criticism of woke stuff. There's nothing in it there's no lines in it that made me eye roll going like, okay, I get it or something. It's just a fun movie. And
it's pretty nice that I'm on the fence about, really.
What's that?
It's Brie Larson that I'm on the fence about.
Well, but I think they actually made her a little more like she was so, I don't know what it is about Captain Marvel. I guess I had to rewatch the movie I liked Captain Marvel movie, but there was just something like, I didn't really feel like I understood, like I felt as close to that character. Like by the end of the first Captain America movie, or by the end of the first Thor or something like that, I felt like I, you know, knew that character well and wanted to watch more. With Captain Marvel, I never felt quite that way. And it might be because of the disconnect in the chronology of it all. I was just like, I can't compute how she's around in the 90s, but never affected anything, you know? I didn't understand how that worked. Like, she either is... It just made it tough to understand. And she appeared in Avengers, but then they didn't talk about it. Like, where was she at the whole time, you know? Yeah. But they do talk about that in this movie, though. They do talk about why she avoided Earth and stuff. And there's some feelings between her and Rambo because, you know, her mom, Rambo's mom, was, you know, her best friend and all that stuff. And so, and she was like kind of her aunt and stuff. Yeah. And so
that's Rambo as a kid in the Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see her as a grown up in WandaVision. That's where she gets powers.
Right. Yes. I've seen that.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, that's another thing that might've hurt a little bit is maybe
you had to watch so many different things.
Well, you don't really have to watch the shows. I mean, necessarily, but I mean, it would help, right? To get to know, like, I definitely don't think you need to watch a show for Rambo because it's not, you just says, I got powers because of some witch hex or something.
Yeah, but even if you watch the shows, you still miss stuff.
Yeah.
I've been saying though, Marvel's got to stop making everything so interrelated, even though I know that's worked great for them. But at this point, I think it's just too much.
Well, yeah, there's so much. I think they need to put them in funnels. So we're like, if you have certain stuff, it builds up into the movies in a certain funnel, if you will, like the street level stuff.
Or maybe even just like separate, like we know they're going to do X-Men, right? Like have all the X-Men stuff related, but let's say you don't have to know the rest of Marvel for no X-Men, you know, which is how it used to be because X-Men was not Disney actually.
Yeah.
Or have the Avengers, that's their own thing, right? Like, but not every character has to be with every other freaking character.
Yeah, I know.
You could have the X-Men and Avengers working together like they've done in the comics.
Maybe.
Only after you've done a lot of each of them separately, I would say.
Yeah. I would make them separate. And X-Men's a perfect franchise where it is separate. Like they really are their own corner of the universe of Marvel.
We don't need any other Marvel characters in that X-Men stuff.
No, not first. Get them, you know, built up. And I think actually, and another reason why I like that actress, whose name I don't remember, plays Ms. Marvel, because I don't remember anybody's name. She was in an interview, now that she can do interviews and stuff, people ask her all sorts of stuff, and she will just be very honest as a fan and stuff about her feelings. And they asked her, like, why don't you think the movie did better? And she's like, well, I mean, I liked the movie, and I'm sorry it didn't do well, but I think we could put together a pretty good movie and stuff. And I mean, the only thing I can say is maybe Marvel just needs to make sure they stay focused on characters and develop those characters, you know, a lot.
So. The actress is called Iman Vellani.
Yes, that's her name. You know, I think that's true. And I think, I don't know, we'll see, but it was a good movie. I think it'll probably do better in streaming and stuff when more people watch it and talk about it and stuff. You know, there's zero, I don't like using a whole woke thing cause it's so, you know what, I don't use a blanket term, but, over hammering a theme too strongly, let's say, and in a story, they did not do that in this movie for sure. So you can't say that about
that's
this movie.
Good.
At least
good.
I don't feel.
But well, that's I'm glad to hear that. But like we're later, I think we're going to talk about right. But that is, and maybe this is why some people didn't see it because there's a big problem with Hollywood, at least in my opinion, of that happening. If you want to call it woke or whatever, or just excessive messaging. And maybe just people were so, I don't know, they're just assuming it's going to happen, you're right, rather than giving it a chance, the movie. Maybe, although I will say, because some people like this blame, saying, oh, it's all the men. Actually, men made up the minority of the audience for Captain, for the Marvels. So it wasn't that men did not go see this movie.
No, yeah, I think it's
to do with the, you know, with it being a movie that has chicks in spandex in it, you know? That's why.
I like chicks in spandex.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. Plus, you know, I think there's a reality check a little bit too. Like, it still made a lot of money. It just did not make as much money as it should have for how much money they spent in it.
It was really bad though for a Marvel movie.
for a Marvel movie, but they make their movies too expensive. Like,
yes,
$250 million movie.
$300 million.
You know, how often can you expect that to land perfectly every year? I know they've done it, but it's like, maybe you guys should like figure out some ways to chop that budget down a little bit, because it feels a little bloated after a while.
I agree. I've been saying this to Super Geeked Up a lot. They can't keep doing that. They're not going to be able to make a profit if they keep doing that.
No, not if they're going to come out with as many movies as they do every year. I don't think that's realistic, especially in this market now.
Part of it may also for this movie, I've been criticizing Marvel for a while, but I think people just have fatigue maybe at this point, you know, like it's just too much.
I do think so. And not just for Marvel. We're talking
superheroes, I think, super in general
genre. Yeah. Cause you also have DC popping out a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And they're all failing really bad. And that's part of that's because of the weird transition period we're in, right? Between that and James Gunn. Yeah. So
I really enjoy Blue Beetle.
I haven't seen Blue Beetle yet. It's on HBO Max. I plan on watching it. So.
Yeah, it's on my list on Max, but I still haven't motivated myself to watch it, even though I feel like I wanted to. But I guess I guess that's the thing, right? Like, there's superhero fatigue for me. Even though it's, again, when I was growing up, I was dying for any superhero stuff, right? Because it was so rare.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just like, that's too fucking much, guys. Like, just too much.
And there's also, for me now, for Marvel movies, I always watch them in theaters. For DC movies, I will, or any other superhero movie, including Venom and stuff, the Sony ones, I will wait to watch them on streaming usually, unless there's friends who want to go watch it or something. Because I just feel like, I'll be on streaming pretty soon. I'll watch it, you know. At least with Marvel, I feel like, well, I might get spoiled or something, you know, or whatever. And I'm curious. I'm still interested enough in, you know, the old grand picture of it all. But there's so much other superhero stuff. Like, you got Marvel, you got DC, you got the Sony stuff. I know that's technically kind of Marvel, but it's really its own thing too, right? With Venom and Kraven coming out. And
got the Amazons, the Boys, right?
Yeah, you got the Boys. That's right. Invincible. We're going to talk about that a little bit on the cartoon. You got a lot of superhero stuff going on. And so that's going to, that combined with, I could always watch it on streaming probably. So why watch it in theaters? And also, you know, like with DC especially, it's like, I don't know where's Blue Beetle fit in the grand picture stuff? Will there even be a sequel? I don't even know, you know? So I don't feel a need to really watch it right away.
I think Blue Beetle is kind of like the start of
the new
universe.
Supposedly.
But,
who knows what'll happen.
It's quite a good film. I quite enjoyed it. You know, so like it's very much its own thing.
But you got Aquaman 2 coming out, right? So, and that's not, it's a very weird transition period. It's not James Gunn's fault or anything. And they got movies. At least they're not just dumping them like Batgirl and get tax refunds. But
you're right.
It is confusing.
DC just been a mess in the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think DC just screwed the pooch when they tried to make Superman like Batman.
Well, yeah.
And they've just been able to walk back from that. And it's just sort of like...
Well, to me, Zack Snyder has a certain vibe to him. And when he does that vibe, he does it really well. And like Frank Miller... vibes basically, and Alan Moore and stuff like that, and the overall DC universe I never seen it as that vibe, right? So I feel like they would have been better suited to just focus him on, you know, Dark Knight Returns or something like that. Maybe they'll do that someday, but
which is what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he wants to do, and that's what he's best for, you know. His interpretation of Lex Luthor and Superman, I just didn't like him. And And that affects all the other movies in the franchise if they're all interconnected, right?
That's a good point. He's not a director for Superman. He's a director for Batman.
Yeah, he's good for Batman, especially alternate universe Dark Knight.
But he's got his own world now, Red Moon or whatever it's called, Red Harvest or something.
Rebel Moon. Netflix.
Rebel Moon. That's it.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm gonna watch that when it comes out.
I'm curious. I'm gonna check that out as well. Even though I hated his superhero movies, you know, with the exception of maybe Watchmen.
Oh, I love Watchmen.
I like Watchmen.
Yeah.
I like. But again, that's a more different, darker take, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, that's The Boys before The Boys came out. The Boys took it up a notch.
The Boys took it up two notches.
What do you give the Marvels?
What do I give for Marvels? I give it like what would you call it? Unibands or something? I'm trying to think
what's
of something.
What's a uniband?
If I'm not butchering the title, the name of it, that's these bands that are in, they're important to the story. Oh, so okay. Miss Marvel has one.
Yeah.
And I think they tie into the original Captain Marvel in the comic books, if I'm not mistaken. I never knew Captain, the original Captain Marvel very well. But anyway, I'll give it probably 8.75, I think. So
8.75, that's quite good.
Yeah. It was fun. But it was not Captain America. For me, my favorite Marvels are the Captain America movies, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and the Avenger movies. And I don't feel like it reached that level. But it was the next tier down for me.
I love the Captain America movies and the Avengers movies, but I also and Guardians of the Galaxy I like Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 3 the best. I watched the other day for the first time and I was in tears.
Yeah, threes.
What went on with, you know?
Yeah.
But I also really enjoyed the first Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
One of my favorites, actually, of the Marvels. I love Ant-Man.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites as well.
And I like some of the Thor first and third Thor movies I liked a lot. And you know, there's a mix, but ones I said were like the ones that like most solid for me. So,
Ian, why aren't you demanding a Captain Britain movie?
Right?
Well, I think Captain Britain lends itself better to a TV series, to be honest.
Oh, there we go. Okay, good.
You know? And it's an interesting dichotomy as well, because you've got Captain America, where it's all kind of like Captain America is a product of science, yeah?
Yeah.
Whereas Captain Britain's a product of magic.
Yeah, it's different, right? Yeah.
That makes sense. Britain's more magical.
I know Captain Britain more from Excalibur series, so... I know him a lot.
It's brother of Betsy Braddock, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Who becomes Psylocke.
Yeah, I think there was rumors like him.
Betsy Braddock is actually now Captain Britain in the comics.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, I'm not up on nowadays.
Yeah, I'm behind on.
That's
on
interesting. Wait, so what did Quanon be return to her own body?
I've not read that storyline.
That was in the 90s, like Betsy Braddock and a Japanese woman named Quanon switched bodies, and that's how she got. Never mind, I won't go into all.
That's how we get Asian Psylocke, right?
Yes, which is the best Psylocke.
In the new storyline, her brother, can't remember his name, Brian Braddock, he ends up being enchanted by Morgana.
Like King Arthur and Morgana?
Yeah. Like King Arthur, Morgana, and because of how it went down, he doesn't feel that he can go back and reclaim the Captain Britain sort of like moniker. So while he's enchanted and that, Betsy becomes Captain Britain, and her first mission is to sort of like save her brother Brian from this enchantment where Morgana's having him do some really dark shit, you know, really horrible things.
Like watching, you know, reality TV shows.
Yes. So we're now moving on to Invincible Season 2.
Invincible.
There's 4 episodes a moving episode, I think, that they released earlier in the year. I've not seen any of it other than Season 1. I watched all of Season 1 and quite enjoyed it. So quite enjoyed the idea of a superhero really being a villain.
Yeah. If you like Season 1, you'll like Season 2. It's more good stuff. what you're referring to is Adam Eve episode. It focuses just on Adam Eve. I'm pretty sure in the comic books they did something like that. I feel like it's been a while since I read them, but I feel like there was something like that. And that was really well done. We'll get you more about that character. And then we only got 4 episodes, unfortunately, in Season 2 so far. They're taking a break and they'll come back next year.
That's something you can binge watch over Christmas then.
Yeah. And, you know, it's good stuff. It's like The Boys. It's a violent level. It's like The Boys. It's not quite sexual, though. And I love how I have always just enjoyed the Invincible world and series and stuff. I just love how there's no wasted characters, right? Every character, someone could pop in and then, you know, multiple episodes later, they pop back in and something's happened and changed to them. They've been doing stuff, you know, while they were gone. And Invincible's great about that. And I'm really excited to see, you know, where we go. They made a few minor changes. They made some stuff to make Omni-Man a little bit more relatable or something. And that weren't quite as strong in the comic books. So you sympathize with him just a little bit more after what he did. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, where they go. And they also did something else that was not in the comic books, and it remains to be seen what the repercussions of that will be. So it's, I'm curious to see what happens. So, I mean, I like how close they stay to the comic books. I'd be fine with, to me, it's the most accurate comic book adaptation to date I've seen, and I've been enjoying it.
It's also from the pen of Robert Kirkman, who did the Walking Dead comics as well. So
yeah, and really Invincible is my favorite thing from him. I mean, I like Walking Dead too, but and I've read a bunch of his other stuff, but I never really, none of that clicked as well as Invincible. So, but so,
it's almost like a precursor to The Boys as well.
Yeah, well, it's after The Boys, I'm pretty sure. The Boys, I'm pretty sure The Boys were out.
Well, so The Boys came first, do you think?
I don't know. I feel like it did, but you know, I could be wrong because I didn't read The Boys when it came out. So I guess I don't know 100% when it came out. I just imagine it's older because like that creator created Preacher and stuff. So to me, that stuff's like seems older, but it may not be. I don't know.
Well, Preacher was kind of 1990s, I think.
Yeah, I don't see The Boys comic book. Let's see when it came out. It's a good question, and let me just find out. It came out in 2006, so maybe not. Let's see. Invincible comic book was 2003. Yeah, so Invincible did come out first. Huh. So, yeah. So, really, Invincible did predate some of the stuff.
I remember Wayne Hall when we used to do Wayne's comics on the podcast years and years ago. Mm-hmm. One of the earliest iterations of Sci-Fi Pulse Radio, Wayne was always talking about Invincible and recommending it to me as something I should check out. So
yeah, it's great, and it's a complete series too. It's done. So yeah. I did not realize it predated The Boys by a little bit. It's interesting. So yeah, I wonder if that affected The Boys at all, because it's sort of, they're sort of in the same category, except not nearly as sexual or as crazy as The Boys is, but it was more violent than a lot of stuff we've seen in comic books up to that date, which was what I was like, holy crap, you know, and that's what would be true, right? If you have a Superman like level person who just isn't even careful, you know, just accidentally could hurt someone. But I think the Invincible's got a little more heart, a little more hero in it. The Boy's a little more cynical analysis of the world. But anyway, the Invincible is great. If you like season one, you'll love season two, except you may not love that there's a break, but you'll love the episodes.
Well, out of 10, what would you give the season two so far?
Out of 10 Invincibles?
Well, you know, 10 Invincibles, it sounds like... Like signing up with Dagny Marfa.
I think for 9.5, I think it's good. So I can't say anything too weak about it. So it's pretty much the comic book adapted, made a little better. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're on to another thing that you want to the table.
Yeah. Let me just mention this real fast.
Yeah, you got 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
That's it. Oh my God.
It's all done. Quote by Marx from SFP Reviews. Oh my God.
They could take that either way. Who knows?
Yeah. So in case you haven't heard, Slayer, if you know Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Slayers is an audio drama that recently was released that has many of the actors returning for like Spike, Anya, Cordelia, a bunch of them. And it is set, you know, 12 years or whatever after Buffy ended. And I don't think it gives too much away, because if you read the synopsis, you'll kind of get this. It deals with a Cordelia Chase from an alternate Earth where she was the Slayer, not Buffy. And she comes to the main Buffyverse Earth to get help to defeat their big bad, which is Drusilla. And Spike is, of course, involved in it. She ropes in Spike and other characters. And it's really well done. I haven't finished it yet, but it really, the actors really go right back into their chemistry, their dynamics and dialogue and stuff. And it was great hearing those voices again and having another story that's written by Amber Benson, It was Tara, and then Christopher Golden, I believe is his name, who's written a lot of Buffy related stuff. So it's pretty cool. So it's cool.
That's nice. That does sound like a cool storyline. And I was a huge Buffy fan, but how did they get their rights to do this? My question.
Oh, I mean, it's an official production.
It's official of whoever owns.
Yeah, for whoever owns. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an Audible original. So,
Okay.
Yeah. Disney have the rights to Buffy now, don't they? Because it's all the series. What? Disney.
No, they might, because Fox had it.
No. Oh, shit. No, but Buffy wasn't Fox.
Oh, shit, Fox. Fox, yeah, because Disney
Buffy wasn't Fox. Buffy was
I think you're right.
Buffy was WB, then UPN.
Yeah, because there were some YA books that came out, and those were published by Disney recently that were Buffy-related, Buffyverse related. So, yeah. I think so.
Buffy wasn't Fox, though, so they must have gotten it some other way.
I don't know.
It was WB, then UPN.
I don't know.
But this is ridiculous, though, man. Disney is seriously getting everything. This is, like, out of control. I've been saying that for years, too, though.
Yeah.
It's even got Doctor Who now, and they're actually rebooting Doctor Who.
So yeah. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
We'll talk about that. We're going to wrap it up with that. So, but before we do that... Let's go on.
Wait, did you give a rating or to Slayers?
Well, I haven't completely finished it, but I would say just from the first few, there's like 9 episodes and then like after credits and stuff. I would say from a nostalgia feel, it's like freaking 9.9 or whatever stakes or something just so far. But so far, story-wise and the quality of the acting and stuff, I would say it's at least 8.5 to 9, but it's still just early. So I'm just waiting to see where it all goes. But they do a good job balancing out, because it's hard to do audio dramas, right? And they have a lot of characters that pop in and out and talking and stuff. But I can close my eyes. If you've seen Buffy, I don't know how it would be if you've never seen Buffy, but I've seen Buffy. I close my eyes and I can almost see the scenes and stuff in my mind. And they've done a great job with that.
Cool.
Yeah, but Buffy came out before we had HD, right? So all the scenes you see in your mind will be quite fuzzy. if you're from the
UK. I've been watching, there's one channel now has A-Team all the time, which is my favorite shows. I actually think still SD shows still look good. I think they look fine, I think.
They look fine. You just can't blow them up too big.
Yeah. So watch them on the TV, not the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't see if they have acne underneath all the makeup, though.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
All right. Quantum leap time, right? Let's leap over to a new topic. Okay.
I'm not caught up, so I'm going to mute and put my headphones off. So just let me know when you're done. Okay.
All right.
Okay. We'll let you know in chat. Okay. So Quantum Leap, the last episode that aired was Secret History. Mm-hmm. And basically in this episode, Ben must find a formula hidden by Albert Einstein that holds the key to nuclear energy before the Nazis get it.
Wow, you must also be on the IMDb page, because that's the sentence I'm looking at.
this was a brilliant episode. I really enjoyed this one.
It was very good.
And it did pay off that thing that I said from the Mexican diner as well.
Yes, I was also predicting that. The character of Hannah, right, you mean? I knew she was going to be back. I knew, but I didn't know she was going to come back so quickly. Well, 3 episodes later, that was actually a little quicker than I thought, but I was very happy to see her.
Nice Tanger does a bringing job of the role as well. So
that's the actress. She's great. I like her character a lot. I like that. It's actually again, spoiler folks, but this is the first character in history that Ben is told that he's a time traveler to,
mm-hmm.
And she believes him. And I knew they were leading up to, like, once she finds out and believes him, like a romantic thing, but I did not expect him to kiss her at the very end. That was cool though, because honestly, I've never liked him with Addison. I don't think they have good chemistry. So I'd rather have Addison go with the other dude and him get with this with Hannah, to be honest with you. What do you think?
I'm like you. I didn't think he had particularly great chemistry with Addison. But I take it a bit further. I just didn't like the idea of the Reaper being romantically involved with the hot lamp from the very start of the series. I think it worked better when it was just friends. That's the reason why Anne and Sam work so well in the original. They're best mates sort of thing. And they're practicing like brothers. You know,
yes.
Anne was almost like an older brother to Sam, and you know, mm-hmm. felt very, very responsible for Sam and was looking after Sam. And Dal had his own personal emotional baggage as well around women, which eventually gets resolved, you know, when we find out why, you know, he's such the cad that he becomes in the series, sort of thing. You know, that gets resolved and sorted at the end of the series, I think. But it's just sort of like, I just think like that dichotomy of them being in a relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
I would have preferred Ian to be the hologram.
Yeah, I said the same thing last time we talked about this. And so I didn't like the episode before this, Magic being the hologram at all. I thought that's like the last person you should have. Even though I like Magic as a character, but not as the hologram. He's the boss.
I also think, you know, having Magic as a hologram, it's too personal.
Yeah, I actually think, who's the new boyfriend? Oh, Tom. Tom is the character's name. I actually thought he was probably decent as the hologram, even though obviously weird for Ben because he's dating Addison now. I think Ian, I mean, it's tough because Ian's also the tech person, but Ian should do it. But they had this whole subplot with Ian going on, which is sort of interesting, but I don't know. I think the whole thing where they showed up at this woman's car and they're like, haha, we know who you are. That felt kind of like simple writing to me, like just explaining something away. I don't know. I don't know if that's fully working for me, that subplot.
It felt a bit tacked on to me.
Yeah.
That felt like something that they just added on as an afterthought and they're not thought through properly.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to keep rotating these holograms or what. I'm not sure what they're going to do. And maybe that's because maybe they realized like the whole Addison thing wasn't working as the hologram as much. I don't know.
I'm liking Tom more and more now. Whereas, when I first met Tom early on, I thought it was kind of a jerk.
I don't know why you thought that, because he's so nice, but you thought he was like pretending or something, right?
Yeah, I kind of felt, I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop because he just felt a little bit too good to be true for me. If you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. He's like, he's such a nice guy. I guess it's almost unbelievable, but I think he really is a nice guy. And in this episode, we get to see more of his backstory, right? So you get to feel more, really get the feel for him and how he lost his wife to cancer.
Yeah. Well, I like the way that, you know, in a very short time, him and Ben are kind of bonding and, you know, there's a mutual respect there by the end of that episode between
the two men.
And I really enjoyed that.
I did too. What I did think was funny though is when Sam kisses Hannah at the end and then he leaps. I was just thinking she's going to be kissing this old professor dude and the professor's probably like, what the heck's happening?
I also enjoyed the whole mythos around Albert Einstein.
That was cool.
And it was set during a time when he'd been, I think, I don't know how long he was at Princeton University, whether he was at Princeton University for a few years or whether he was just a visiting lecturer or something. Because I don't really know much about the history of Einstein.
I don't know a ton either.
You know, but he is an interesting character, and I have read a little bit about him because apparently he was autistic.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and he had a very similar early childhood to what I had, in that he was nonverbal until he was about 5 years old.
I didn't know that.
And
so are you telling us you're going to be the next Einstein?
No, I'm not saying I'm going to be the next Einstein. I'm nowhere near that clever, and I hate maths. But one of the difficulties he had throughout his life was tiny shoelaces. He couldn't tie his shoelaces.
Oh, wow.
And stuff like that. There's you know, all sorts of evidence about it, which is kind of cool. You know, he's kind of a cool person for people on the autism spectrum and neurodivergent people to sort of look up to.
That's very cool information. I didn't know that.
So the
storyline was cool. This is actually their top rated episode on IMDb as I'm on their page right now. So I can understand why.
I can as well. I mean, the use of Nazis, Operation Paperclip, which was obviously about the German rocket scientist defecting to America and ending up in quite high positions. You know, one being Werner von Braun, you know, the NASA engineer.
I think my favorite episode still may be the Closure Encounters, which is the other one, though, where Hannah gets introduced. So she's been in two really awesome ones.
Yeah. I think they're both awesome episodes.
I look forward to seeing her more come back. The only thing I'll just very briefly mention, one negative thing, because I'm sure we're going to get more into this with Doctor Who and Mark's brought it up with the Marvels. My one criticism of Quantum Leap is that I feel they do push the social messaging too hard. And I'm fine with it if it's subtle and you work it in, but they don't show it and subtle. They're always like specifically telling you this is the message. This is what you should do. Yeah, whether I agree with it or not, don't hit me over the head with it.
It's breaking the first rule of writing as well. I mean, there's that rule in writing, show, don't tell.
Yeah. So I wish, like, and they did it once in this episode. But the problem is it takes me out of the episode because I'm thinking about, okay, guys, yes, I get it. You're trying to get this message across. But I shouldn't be thinking that. I should just be thinking of the story and the characters. So that's my one complaint about, and I feel they've done a little worse job of it this season with the social messaging. But outside of that, the show's really well done, I think. I'm really enjoying it. They have good characters, good storytelling. Do you want to rate the episode?
How many quantum accelerators should we get?
Let's see. So this episode specifically, quantum accelerators, I'll probably give it like 8.75 quantum accelerators. What about you?
I'm about the same, I think. I don't want to give it a 9.
I was almost on the verge of a 9.
It's on the verge of a 9. So I'll go with 8.75. And as the same as you, I think this is one of those rare occasions where me and you are actually on the same page.
Yeah, well, we both, I think, have been enjoying Quantum Leap overall, though. So
yeah. I'm enjoying it, but I still get nostalgic for the original run, and I still watch the original run as well. So,
well, that's understandable. And there are, I see here, at least there's 2 more episodes one this coming week, and then 2 in December. So we got 2 more, I guess, they've done before any of the strike stuff happened. So that's good.
It's going to be one next week, I think, on the 7th.
Yeah. Or just 6 over here. I guess we get a day early.
I watch it on the 7th because, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good show. I'm enjoying it still. So.
Well, that's all right.
One week, 8.5. Cool. And we can bring Mats back into the conversation now.
Hey, I'm bleeped back.
Oh,
good. That was, I was like, thank goodness it was a short leap you did.
Whew, luckily, I saved time and history.
This is going to be a really even shorter segment. I just want to mention to you guys that here in the UK, that time travel series Lazarus is back on. I'm not sure who's showing it in the States. Was it Peacock or someone?
Is it TNT? Or FX?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But yeah, it's been. I watched some of it.
Yeah, well, the first season aired last year here in the UK. They've just released the second season of it in the last couple of weeks. And basically, it's another time travel series about a single event that they are trying to sort of like change, because this single event kind of ends time and they're trying to prevent it all from happening.
Sort of thing. I saw Loki. It's done.
It's kind of like... You kind of have to watch it to sort of appreciate the nuance of it, but it's a good series, and it's worth investing a bit of time in if you're looking for a more interesting take on time travel.
Cool. The internet tells me TNT does air the series over in the United States.
Yeah, my memory worked.
Which brings us onto our...
I questioned it because I was like, does TNT still exist?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, well, that wraps up the show for this week. And pretty soon we're hoping to do another best and worst of the year sort of thing. So, you know, we'll hopefully be back towards the end of December. Mm-hmm. But that's it now. So we'll catch you on the flip side. Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.